Hello, I'm Michael Heyman, and you're listening to Changemakers. My guest today is Rob Law, the founder and CEO of Trunky, the suitcase for globe-trotting tots. Now, Rob was the one that got away from Dragon's Den, but leaving the den empty-handed didn't stop him turning Trunky into a business which has sold over 2.8 million suitcases in over 100 countries around the world. On overcoming setbacks, he said, "You've just got to keep pushing forward and finding new ways around obstacles. The quicker you embrace them, the faster you can get to the other side and keep growing." Born with cystic fibrosis, Rob watched his twin sister die from the same illness at 16. Told he could not expect to live into his 20s, he made a promise that he was going to defy the odds and live a long and successful life. He captured the lessons he learned in his book, 65 Roses and a Trunky, Defying the Odds in Life and Business. Rob, welcome to Changemakers. Let's talk about this extraordinary story, which you've captured in the book. Let's start, though, with that quote I shared. "You've just got to keep pushing forward and finding new ways around obstacles." Tell us more about that.
Well, I guess I'm a trained product designer, and product designers are naturally good problem solvers. And I've just seen my life as a hurdle of problems that needed solving. And that's kind of the approach I kind of take to things. And in an early life in business, certainly when you're thrown so many challenges to overcome in startup mode, I was able to overcome them fairly swiftly, albeit not necessarily in the right direction you had initially hoped to, but you overcame those challenges and move forward.
As any parent will probably say, Trunky is one of those things that a lot of your kids want. I can certainly tell you that as a dad of two young girls, I can remember on a trip to Spain, the first time my girls saw Trunkies, and it was like this kind of moment of amazement. And, you know, when you look at your business now, it's one of those kind of like amazing products that you think, what a clever idea. Where did you come up with the idea in terms of that sort of suitcase for globe-trotting tots?
Well, it was a long time ago, actually. I came up with the idea while I was studying product design at the University of Northumbria, and we entered a national luggage design competition. So I was kind of 19, 20 years old, didn't have kids, and went to the local department store to try and find inspiration. Back in 1997, hard molded plastic suitcases were quite fashionable from the likes of Samsonite and Carlton, but it was all black and boring, and I kind of drifted off into the kids' toy section and remember standing in front of the array of ride-on toys and reminiscing how my younger brother used to relentlessly ride his tractor around the garden. But that's using a different manufacturing technique that wastes a lot of space, and I thought, why not make a really functional ride-on suitcase for kids that maximizes that internal volume using this technology that the adult suitcases are doing, and create a new concept. I traveled a bit, and new kids got bored at airports and thought, I'll give it a go. I went on to win the competition.
Endless hours of fun.
And yeah, the judges said it's a great idea. You should try and commercialize it. You should try and license it. So I went off to see Carlton, really excited about revolutionizing family travel together. And my enthusiasm was slightly dampened by them fairly quickly telling me that they were in the luggage business and I'd invented a toy. So that meeting ended fairly sharply. But I saw that as another opportunity. Well, if they don't think it's luggage, it must be a toy. So I'll approach toy companies who, surprise, surprise, thought it was a piece of luggage, and no one would take it on for about 5 years of trying. I eventually found a startup toy company who did take it on. They had it for 3 years. I was really excited. Global licensing deal. I'll be able to retire young, sipping cocktails on the beach. And they ended up going into liquidation 3 years later with only one customer in Saudi Arabia. So they never launched Trunky in the UK or Europe or the US. And so that was very frustrating. But again, it was kind of, well, they were a toy company. They really needed to give it more of a travel push. And actually, the learning there was, it's not a toy. It's not a piece of luggage. It needs to be repositioned as a lifestyle brand for parents, primarily targeting mum. And that was when I quit my job as a product designer and decided to do it myself. And the first shipment of Trunkies arrived in Avonmouth docks on the 5th of May, 2006. That's now hailed as our birthday.
The birthday. Now, another key date was your famous encounter with the dragons, where you pitched and they told you it wasn't a great idea. Tell us a little bit about how you unpack the story for them and what you took out of the experience.
Well, this was season three, and we actually filmed 2 weeks after that first container arrived in the UK, so I didn't have any national customers. Surprisingly, the luggage buyers told me to see the toy buyers, and the toy buyers say, go and see the apparel buyers, and I could never get my foot through the door initially. But the pitch went perfectly. I towed Richard Farley, the Aussie guy, around on the Trunky in the studio. Everything was going so well until Trixie, the pink Trunky, ended up at Theopithetus's feet, who latter built a reputation for strength testing products. bollocks, and he tugged on the toe strap, realized the hook bent slightly, and he pulled it off. And no matter how hard I tried, I could not bring that pitch back on to par, and the Dragons all lambasted me, and kind of I got thrown out the den empty-handed.
I mean, it's funny, a lot of people will often say about that's one of the big ones they really got wrong in terms of look at what you then went on to achieve. Did you take a life lesson with you out of that experience, or did you just shrug it off?
Back then it was filmed in an old warehouse, so I left the top of the stairs thinking, damn, I'm leaving without a deal. I really hoped I could have got some money because I haven't got any. And by the time I got to the bottom of those stairs, I was like, oh Christ, this is going to go on telly and it will probably ruin my business. About 6 months later, it finally aired, and I went down to local news agents every Tuesday to try and find out if there'd be any notice about it. So I'd pick up the Radio Times Tuesday night, 9 o'clock, BBC Two. And 1 week it said, wheelie rubbish. The colour drained from my face. And I thought,
wheelie rubbish.
I thought it was going to be bad. I thought I might have got away with it. And because I hadn't heard anything from the BBC, and it did air, and it was kind of brace yourself for some serious car crash telly. So I kind of thought, well, I don't know how to solve this at the time when I left the den, but that interim period of 6 months, kind of I was learning more, I was getting more sales, I was exporting internationally. When I realized there was going to be a bit of theatrical telly really hitting the BBC, I thought, well, I'll get a lot of website visits. I might not sell many trunkies, but I'll try and use that as an opportunity to garner feedback from customers. Posted a survey up online, and that night over 2,000 people filled in the survey. We sold out of trunkies, but the real turning point was then realizing from that 2,000 people's bit of feedback that everyone thought trunkie was brilliant. And the problem was retailers didn't get it, investors didn't get it, manufacturers didn't get it, but my target market got it.
But your target market got it. And of course, you know, the rest, as they say, is history in terms of trunkie emerging as this kind of iconic design, much loved by kids and parents alike. Yet beneath this story of apparent, you know, leaping from gilded height to gilded height is actually a story of great challenge. I mean, not least a lifelong battle with cystic fibrosis, losing your twin sister along the way, and capturing a lot of the emotion and, you know, that story as part of a book you launched last year, 65 Roses and a Trunkie, Defying the Odds in Life and Business. I mean, this really is your story, that actually you've often taken odds that looked very, very difficult to beat and actually gone ahead and done precisely that.
Yeah, well, the book came about through, I do quite a lot of corporate business speaking events, and it's only ever talking about the trunkie story. Everyone always says, oh, you should write a book about your story. And it came a couple of years ago, I had a bit of time on my hands, and I thought, well, I'll give this project a go. But actually, there's a deeper story about my personal battle that I think if I could tell that well and interweaved with my business journey, people might learn something about resilience and how to overcome challenges. And
so share some of that story with listeners, Rob, in terms of just frame it for us.
Sure. I guess growing up, all I've ever known is having this condition, cystic fibrosis. So it was my normal, but it involved brutal physio regimes, being inclined for several hours a day on a tipping bed, trying to cough up mucus because your lungs get really clogged up, and that's the life-threatening part. Going in and out of hospital, taking loads of drugs, intravenous drug therapies, all sorts of things. And it was a pretty torturous childhood having to go through that, and shared that experience with my twin sister. But she kind of got worse off than I did, and was on the slippery slope, ended up having a heart and lung transplant when she was 15, and then had a whole new lease of life after that for about 9 months before her body rejected the organs, and very quickly she sadly passed away at Great Ormond Street.
A bit of a tragic story. And you said in your lockdown list that accompanies this episode that you almost feel like you're living my life for the both of us, you said. I mean, is that part of, do you think, the kind of the superpower, the energy, the kind of the drive?
Yeah, clearly it was a hugely traumatic experience for the family and everyone, but I kind of use that as a lesson that life is short and you should really make the most of it. When you're faced with these hurdles, they kind of seem a little bit more insurmountable to me because I've had to face various things in my life, and it is just kind of about getting on with it.
I loved reading that your mum used to tell you that when you moaned, she would remind you that many people were worse off than you. I mean, only a mum can get away with that kind of message, I often think. I mean, in terms of how that affected your sense of self, your sense of struggle, your sense of the situation that you were facing. Is that part of the positivist, the optimist that you took something from even the most testing of situations?
Yeah, I mean, having that self-pity road or door closed off from a young age, I never really reflect back on my own personal battles. In fact, actually writing the book was really therapeutic and really interesting. And I actually pulled out, working with my ghostwriter, Peter Hughes, some really interesting things that weren't front and centre of my mind. They were just the way of being. But yeah, I mean, my way of coping with CF was to build a wall and pretend I was normal. Yeah, my brutal physio regime was normal. And when I left the house, I was normal. And I'll try and do everything I could to be normal and just get on with it.
In terms of cystic fibrosis today, in terms of how it affects your day-to-day life now, in terms of Rob the adult, tell us a little bit about how you live with the condition today.
There was a couple of hours a day on physiotherapy, taking various drugs, but I found sport really helpful just to stay fit and healthy. I had a few false starts in early childhood about a cure being around the corner. And after being let down a few times, I kind of thought, well, the only thing I can do, the only thing in my control is to stay as fit and healthy as I can until that cure comes along, rather than trying to quite literally hold my breath until it did arrive. So I forgot about the cure, forgot about when it might happen, and just focused on trying to stay fit and healthy. And being dyslexic, I'm a bit uncoordinated. So despite trying to play football with my mates and cricket and all those kind of sports, I was always on the subs bench, and really found running, cycling and swimming was my real passion, and put those all together into triathlons about a decade ago.
I mean, and very specifically for the moment, in terms of living with a pre-existing condition through the COVID epidemic, has that affected your outlook in any way? Or again, is it just getting on with it?
It was getting on with it, but then there were a couple of barriers to getting on with it, with receiving the letter from the government saying you're critically vulnerable and you shouldn't leave the house. And you're thinking, geez, when am I ever going to go into a shop again? The challenges of getting those food parcels and the home food delivered initially for a couple of weeks. But with everything kicking off and the challenges to the business, I just kind of thought, well, I've got to be, to get through this, I need some mental energy. So I'm just going to be grateful for what I've got. We've got a nice garden. The sun was out. Got beautiful children, and just living with them in the garden, really enjoying their company. That was a real rejuvenator for me to give me the mental strength to get through this.
Your young kids, 7, 4, and 21 months, we were saying, great ages, great energy to have around you. Now, let's not lose the book title, 65 Roses and a Trunky. We've got one half of that. Explain the roses to us.
Well, children often struggle to pronounce cystic fibrosis, so it's quite often called 65 Roses by children. So that seemed like quite a poetic title to use. But funnily enough, I mean, the other complication with CF, and there's a few around being able to digest food and always having to take pills every time I eat. For quite a lot of men, it means I can't father children. And I kind of learnt when I was at university that wasn't going to be possible for me. And I spent most of my adult life thinking I couldn't be a father. Yeah, I'm running this children's travel brand. But then with the wonders of modern technology, me and my partner decided that we'd try, and went through IVF, had a few tragedies, but we kept persevering, and now we have those three beautiful kids.
Wonderful. So many of the challenges that you faced have been big ones. I mean, I think by any measure, in terms of personal health, in terms of parenting, growing a small business into a fantastically successful business. And of course, you've captured a lot of those experiences in the book. In terms of the lessons that you would share with listeners about overcoming the odds, the mindset that you need to actually give yourself the best chance of winning, what would be the lessons you'd share?
I think one of the things that came out of process of writing the book and reflection was actually success is just the highlight in a series of defeats. You kind of, success is short-lived, and people always think, well, success is retiring and living on a yacht or whatever it is, but life's a journey and things are short-lived, and without purpose, without drive and enthusiasm, something you really believe in, you're going to be lost. So yeah, success might be getting that first house or that first car or these material things and then starting a family, but they happen and then you move on and you've got to keep moving those goalposts.
But you mentioned purpose, and a lot of people spend their life in a quest for purpose. They want to find meaning. They want to find the ideas that can drive them. And as you say, that doesn't have to be the success in terms of the final outcome. It could be about living a meaningful life. I mean, that seems to be something that you've had tremendous success at, in terms of making your own circumstances make sense within the context of your own living experience. A lot of that, I guess, revolves around how you approach the day-to-day and the mindset that you are able to unleash as part of that. And I'm just wondering with you, Rob, whether there are things that you would point to in terms of, right, this is how I really deal with my worst day, my most difficult day. This is how I turn it into something else. Is there a tip, or is it just completely unique, do you think, to individual circumstances?
No, I think there is a bit of a pattern. I mean, facing a challenge, some challenges can go on for a long time. So you really need that mental energy to keep persevering at trying to find a solution. So you've got to really focus in on the things you can control and forget about the things you can't. And a great example of that was when at the height of the terrorist threats in 2006, there was a liquid bomb threat that the Secret Services foiled. But as a result, hand luggage was banned. And I just launched a children's hand luggage business. So the very product was banned from its use. So I tried phoning the Department of Transport, Heathrow, Virgin Galactic, and very quickly realized there's no way I can influence that when that ban might be lifted. So I've just got to focus on what I can do, which is controlling costs, trying to pivot my marketing message to staycations. So yeah, you've really got to focus on what you can influence, and that will help you navigate through the storm, conserve that energy, feel grateful for what you've got, whatever that may be. Just be grateful and really rejuvenate your energy through that reflection.
I would offer you a thought, Rob, which is that, you know, there is that saying that life is what happens when you're busy making plans. It strikes me that a lot of your story has been about the ability to live in the moment, that actually a lot of it is about a sense of mortality, a sense of time, and that frames the way you look at the world slightly differently than perhaps people that haven't had some of the same challenges.
Yeah, I guess so. I also feel I'm quite lucky to have found a skill quite early age when I was about 14. And through realizing I couldn't be an astronaut or soldier because they need strong lungs, I had to try and think earlier than most about what I could do. And my careers advisor at high school said, you might be a landscape gardener. That didn't quite tick my boxes. But I found product design. And as later I learned, as Sir Ken Robinson says, finding your element. I was lucky enough to find that and to really put all my energy into becoming a good product designer, and then to find a product to then use that skill to launch the brand and the business.
And did you find that product design, was that something you found through experience, or was there a moment, was there a person, was there an inspiration that helped you along the way?
There wasn't much at school. It was graphic design or woodwork. I liked them, but they weren't really what I was really excited about. And product design was quite an unknown skill set at the time. It's now very popular, but Richard Seymour and Dick Powell, who used to run a TV program about how to reinvent the toilet or an iron or the kettle and all these consumer products, they really captured my attention. They had done they created a book which very simply was use a marker renderings to make like products look real life. And that skill just really captured my imagination. And I tried to hone that skill, and that kind of catapulted me into this world of consumer product design.
I mean, it's interesting because a lot of people, when they grumble about Dragon's Den, they'll say, well, it's a show not about entrepreneurs. It's about inventors. It's about people that like making things and have got no idea how they're going to build a business out of it. I mean, it sounds to me like you were an inventive human being that has then gone on to learn how to build a really great business.
Yeah, I think marketing came reasonably naturally to me, and a realization very early on that I had a great product, but build a great business, I needed a great team, and trying to learn about leadership early on in that journey. At the time, I couldn't hire expensive people, so I was just looking for passionate people who believed in trying to revolutionize children's travel. And they joined, and we grew the business, and then we grew and grew. And yeah, had a great team behind us.
But it's often the case that a lot of entrepreneurs have this sort of skill that they can see around corners. And it sounds like in those early days when people were looking at Trunky as toy, not travel, is that was the breakthrough into understanding, look, this wasn't a kind of just something to play with. This was actually introducing kids to the traveling experience. In terms of that breakthrough thinking, was that something that bringing together your team allowed you to start to think about, or had you already spotted that opportunity and you were beginning to open that up?
The inception of Trunky was a bit of a fluke and an insight that then led on to, once we started trading a couple of years in, we sat down as a team and really tried to pull apart what our values were, what our mission was. A big fan of Jim Collins' Good to Great. So I used that almost as a blueprint to try and run my business. And from that, it became very clear that our purpose, our mission was around enabling parents and carers to take their their kids off traveling.
Blue ocean, red ocean. I think that was his big idea in the book. But I mean, that obviously is what you found by the category creation. How has the category prospered in an era where we can't travel? What have been the sort of the effects of COVID on your business?
We get some great data through Amazon, and I looked at our rate of sale in Italy when Italy went into lockdown and we saw sales tank 90%. A week later, Spain went into lockdown and it was the canary in the coal mine. So we were planning accordingly for when it hit the UK, which was pretty brutal. But as soon as, I mean, who would have thought sleepovers were going to be banned or illegal? But as soon as lockdown started to ease, the first thing people wanted to do was to go off and see the grandparents. And we got some amazing Instagram images of families going off to visit the grandparents in that magical moment on the front door. So we had a bit of a bounce back in the summer. We were pretty skeptical about how long this was going to go on for. So we planned accordingly. But we're not just about holiday. We went into everyday products. And a product that's been doing booming sales for us is a simple children's harness that initially is designed to stop children running into the road, but it turns out it's incredibly handy for social distancing toddlers. So that's actually hitting record sales, although the suitcases struggled a little bit. And we've also gone into other products like folding balance bikes and scooters. So through my own personal experience of trying to get the kids to the shops on these contraptions, I tied a trunky toe strap around them and tugged them along. That led into a project to actually create a folding balance bike and scooter that can hook on the back of a pram. And we licensed that to Halfords, and they've been doing really well too.
So this is a really good example of when people say, well, a lot of people spent a lot of time reinventing their business models and innovating new products and new ideas. I mean, is this part of the kind of post-coronavirus world where the practical reality for a business like Trunky is it might well become famous for other things, you know, as well as the things that we know it for in terms of kids' travel?
Yeah, well, a big philosophy of mine has been focusing laser precision on one particular thing, being the best in the world at one thing, and that's children's travel. But it's not just about holiday, it's about everyday. So I think the gap for us in the market is around baby products kind of for babies. And then there isn't really much for that kind of toddler age around getting out and about other than traditional category products like child carriers that you put on your back. So that's still ripe ground for us. And we've got really fine-tuned marketing to get to mum now. So we still need to be selling child-related products to mum. But there's a lot of opportunity out there for other areas we can go into.
Because I always think about Trunky as quite a joyful brand. And, you know, I'm interviewing you now and there's a load of Trunkies behind you on the shelves there. And it has me thinking about, you know, one of the things I always think about holiday is that, you know, you'll be walking along a platform and you'll see kids being dragged along on their Trunkies, you know, sort of sat on their Trunkies with their parents or their siblings pulling them along. And it's a wonderful moment of just that travel experience of actually the fact that it represents the good things. Right now, as we're living in the latter days of lockdown, it's one of the things that I guess we feel very nostalgic about. And when you think about that future, some people feel quite positively disposed towards it in terms of our ability to get back to doing things in certain ways, or in fact, even doing them better than we did them before. But other people feel, well, we're just not going to go back to those kind of free and easy days where you could travel like that and not worry about social distance or about, you know, that it's going to be just a much harder, more difficult environment. Where do you sit on that?
Well, I think business travel is fundamentally changed through the likes of Zoom and the ease people have of doing business remotely. I don't think family travel's completely changed. People still want to get to the beach. We don't have the best weather here in the UK. Actually, only 35% of our sales are in the UK. So we're a global brand now with quite strong sales in Europe and the Far East. So yeah, I think people are still going to want to travel and get away to their family holiday destinations.
You left us with a tip and a quote, which I'd like to finish the interview on, and inviting you to tell us a little bit more about them. Your tip was to focus on what you can control and don't waste time and energy on what you can't. And your quote is that life's too short to waste it. Make the most of the time you have. Tell us a little bit more, Rob.
Yeah, I guess the first tip there I've kind of covered a little bit in our interview about really focusing that energy on what you can control. Having experienced someone passing away in the family, and most people experience this to some extent, it's a kind of a stark reminder about how short life is and how futile some of our day-to-day challenges actually are. And it really puts things in perspective. So yeah, don't worry too much about buying that new car. Just focus on enjoying the life you've got and living it to the best you can.
Rob Law, thank you so much for such a special interview. And there we have it, the story of 65 roses and a trunkie. Do join me next time for Changemakers.